Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Warriors great and NBC Sports Bay Area analyst Chris Mullen. The Last Dance documentary has understandably received a lot of attention in recent weeks, and if you've been paying close attention, you've seen Chris's face in the background a few times. Chris's career aligned with Michael Jordan's. They graduated in the same high school class, shared a roster at two Summer Olympics, and faced each other in the 1998 Eastern Conference Finals. During our conversation, Mullen discussed what it was like to share so many memories with one of the greatest of all time.
Chris, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I know a lot of our listeners and readers out there have enjoyed your coverage on NBC Sports Bay Area this season. It's been a lot of fun having you back in the fold. And I know I'm not alone in noticing your face on the Last Dance documentary a few times during this series. Chris, what's this been like for you? Just kind of walking down memory lane. I know you weren't on those Bulls teams or anything, but you came up at the same time as Jordan. What's this process been like for you?
Yeah, Connor, my pleasure to be with you, and just want to wish everyone health and safety at this crazy time in our lives, but hopefully everyone's staying safe, staying home, and staying healthy. But yeah, the Last Dance has been a little bit of a nice reprieve and distraction from the quarantine life we're all living. And yeah, as you mentioned, pretty much the timeline of my career, right? So Michael, Jordan, Patrick Ewing, Bill Wentz, a lot of those guys, we all came out of high school together. So we kind of went through our careers at the same point in time.
You were in the same high school class as Michael Jordan. What are some of your earliest memories of MJ? Do you remember hearing about him as a high schooler going to North Carolina? Did you play at any camps with him? Was there anything like that?
Yeah, so 1981, we all played in the McDonald's game together. Patrick, Michael, myself, Bill Wennington. There was a lot of really good players in that game. And that was the first time I saw Michael play. He was incredible. Should have been the MVP. He wasn't, I don't think, anyway. But he scored 30 points and was the most athletic, energetic guy, just as he was throughout his whole career. And then so that was our senior in high school. Played against him. There was a thing back in the day called the National Sports Festival, which was conducted by USA Basketball. Played against him there. And then we played against him twice in college. And then obviously with the 84 Olympic team and 92 Olympic team. So we did a lot of stuff prior to him becoming, the Michael Jordan we all know now. So I kind of saw him really from the start of his career and watched that whole thing blossom into total stardom.
You also were college teammates with Bill Wennington, right, who played with him for the Bulls and is prominently featured in the documentary. Did you keep in touch with him as well during your NBA days? And would he give you the occasional MJ story?
Yeah, so Bill was my roommate. We came into St. John's together. So we're really close and still stay in contact with him. And, even when we were playing during that series, in 98, Bill, Steve Kerr, Judd Bushler, a guy I played with at the Warriors. So, yeah, we all, like I said, a lot of those guys were the same age, coming through college, give or take a few years. So, when you play someone as an opponent and you team up, you just get to know guys over the course of time. And, so Bill's one of my good friends. I still chat with him. Yeah.
For you, surprised at all by how easy of a transition he had to the NBA. I mean, you came in your rookie year and definitely were a factor, but came in right away and was just borderline dominant. Were you surprised at all by how smooth that was for him?
Not really, because in 1984, when we were at the Olympic team, we played 8 exhibition games against NBA teams, like select teams, and they were getting the top players to come. So Michael, I think we went 8-0, and you talk about all the elite players in the league: Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Isaiah Thomas, Ralph Sand, all the All-Stars were playing. And Michael, on many nights, was by far the best player on the court. So we saw a glimpse of it. I think, you know, when you make that transition from college to the NBA, the big thing is the amount of games and the consistency. And but he had no problem with that at all. The only thing that derailed him, really, was his broken foot. And then he came back and got 63 against the Lakers, so that he showed that he was totally recovered from that.
What was he like? There's been a lot of conversation in the documentary about what he was like on a team, as a teammate on the Bulls, and you know, he got, I think probably in my opinion, the best scene in the series so far was when he was talking about his competitive drive and how that kind of made him a difficult teammate at times, how he felt the need to bring guys along, and he got emotional and asked to take a break. You know, having been a teammate of his, not necessarily on an NBA team, but on a Dream Team, that 84 team. What was he like from your perspective?
Yeah, so a totally different atmosphere when you're playing on be it all-star teams, Olympic teams, because the amount of time is much shorter, less games, more practice. So the times I got to play with Michael, 1984, like I said, and the Dream Team, there was nothing really to be upset about because we didn't lose a game. We played 8 exhibition games with the NBA. I think we won all of them. And I think you played 8 games in the Olympic Games, and both in 84 and 92, we won all the games. So my experience with Mike is we were 24-0, so that's not bad. But he was, you know, look, it's everyone knows the drive he has, the competitive fire that burns within him, and his love of the game. So I never really had anything but good experiences with Michael. You know, as long as you're on the same level as far as dedication, work ethic, you know, discipline and focus, you're all good. So, and that didn't change. I saw that in 1981, and I saw that in 1998, you know, when we played when I was with the Pacers. So he was very consistent, and that's why he's considered the greatest of all time.
We'll have more of my conversation with Chris Mullin right after the break.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The chunk of the documentary is devoted to that Dream Team, deservedly so. And I was born in 1990, so I was too young to be aware of this at the time. But I all the information about Tony Kukoc and that whole dynamic in Croatia was actually new information for me, and I think it was for a lot of people in my generation. What do you remember about that, and what was that like? You know, not necessarily having a dog in that fight, not being on that Bulls team, but seeing how much it meant to Michael and Scotty.
Yeah, so I wasn't 100% aware of the backdrop with Jerry Krause and the contract negotiation, but it was clear as day that they were going out to shut Tony Kukoc down, first and foremost to win the game. right? That's what was needed to win that game. And I think there was an extra added factor with the recruitment slash love of Tony Kukoc before, after all Michael and Scotty had done for the Bulls, all this attention was being paid to him before he even stepped foot on the Chicago Bulls team. So mission accomplished in both areas. They shut him down and let it be known, who the two big dogs were.
There was some really interesting footage from one of the practices with that team that sounded pretty intense, and MJ really was going at it with Barkley and those guys. Do you remember that practice, and was that one of the more memorable practices you had? It just sounded like a pretty special one from what the guys were saying.
Yeah, when you're surrounded by some of the greatest players of all time, almost to a man, their habits are what make them great, their daily habits and their work ethic and their discipline. So that was, practice was what we used to prepare for our, that was our rehearsal to go out and perform on the big stage. So Michael, his practice habits were, elite. He really took practice serious. It didn't matter if it was in Monte Carlo, in Chicago, in Timbuktu. He was going to prepare and practice with 100% intensity. He had the unique ability to, no matter where it was, any practice session was the most important thing to him and felt like it was the only thing going on in the world. So that's the type of intensity and focus he brought, not only to his games, but he did that in practice as well.
You also, I'm sure, got to know Scottie Pippen pretty well. This documentary, I think, does a good job of really highlighting how special of a player he was, and some of the challenges, I think, for him of being a number two to someone like MJ on those Bulls teams. Just someone who got to play with him and got to know him, how special was Scottie in his own right? And do you feel like he's underrated in some ways?
Scottie Pippen, to me, is one of the most gifted, greatest players of all time. Plays with such grace and ease. He does everything on the basketball court to perfection. Defense, offense, rebounding, assist, scoring. Incredible athlete. And his defense was, I think, at that point in time of his career, was probably the best perimeter defender and he and Michael together were, just an incredible, tenacious, relentless defensive force. They won a lot of their games with their defense. You'll notice a lot of those games, they were down in the low 80s, and they just locked teams down and were able to play any style they needed to win the game. So, Scotty, he may be underrated with people that kind of just watch and talk about the game. But if you played against him, if you played with him, if you prepared as a coach to play against the team Scottie Pippen was on, there's no way you would underrate him in any facet of the game.
Understand where he was coming from just in terms of the frustrations with the contract dispute, this is a guy who at that time was arguably a top three player in the league. And, given what he was making, and I think we can all kind of understand some of the reasons behind him signing that contract when he did. Did you kind of feel for a guy like that?
The business part is the business part. I didn't really when I'm watching that show, I'm all focused on the basketball stuff. The business, right. that creeps up into everyone's life at some point in time. Obviously, from a strictly business standpoint, you sign a long-term deal for security and you wind up giving up some money. But I didn't really – all that other drama stuff, to me, that's all side notes to what's the most important part is their championship pedigree and the way they play the game of basketball.
Talking to, I'm doing a story right now on just what watching this
documentary is meant to the younger generation of NBA players. So I talked to Eric Paschal, talking to Jordan Poole, talked to Michael Mulder and Marquise Chris, and all those guys were, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years old when MJ won his last title with the Bulls. And so they're kind of getting to understand and really appreciate Michael's greatness through this documentary in a way that he otherwise wouldn't be able to do. Do you think that in some ways that's kind of the greatest thing about this documentary, is that, you know, those who didn't get to see him at the time can kind of get a glimpse at everything that went into making MJ MJ?
Yeah, I think it is nice to get a little bit of up close and personal feel for what Michael, how he functioned, what he was all about, in his own words. Yeah, I even got some, you know, friends of mine or even my kids are like, man, this guy was, you know, we've heard you talk about him, but we didn't know he was that great. So to get for them to see, you know, what made him great, and also how the game has changed too. You know, the game is a different each and every decade, so it just changes. You know, that's what happens in life. That's what happens in sports. So it's cool to just compare. You know, you can never, you know, it's so hard to compare generations, right? But it's nice to look at the people before you, you know, historically, and see what they did and see how their success changed and how people try to emulate them and take it a step further. So that's what it's really all about. You know, and Kobe had some nice quotes on there about he would have never been who he was without Michael, and then Michael wouldn't have been who he was without, you know, Bird, Magic, and Dr. J, and so on. So that's the nice part, where, you know, the game keeps evolving, and the players before have an influence on what goes on in the future.
Is that, with all that being said, is that kind of in your mind what makes it hard to debate, you know, who's the greatest of all time when you're talking about MJ versus LeBron or MJ versus Kobe or what have you, because they all played in different eras and they all, you know, influenced each other?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's just a waste of energy and a waste of time. I kind of just really try to enjoy all the players that, you know, go out and perform at such a high level, appreciate their greatness, and, you know, as far as comparing, it's, to me, kind of a waste of energy, because you're never really going to come up with a solid answer.
I believe episode 9 is really when we get in the thick of it with the Eastern Conference Finals in 1998, and that Pacers team was pretty darn good. I mean, you, Reggie Miller, Rick Smits, all you guys. I think that was probably a team that in a lot of years would have and could have won an NBA title. What was that season like for you on that Pacers team, and, you know, how special was it? How special of a year was it leading up to that series?
Yeah, we had a great year. I mean, the 3 years I played in Indiana, we went to 2 conference finals and an NBA final. So, and that was a team that had been very successful, you know, 4 or 5 seasons leading up to that year. So I really just kind of plugged a small little role on an already successful team to try and help them get over the hump. Larry Bird came in as the new coach, and so we had a lot of success, and that first year, you know, we ran into Michael and took them to Game 7. Game 7 itself wound up being more of a typical Eastern Conference physical defensive battle, and they kind of pulled it out at the end. They had home court, which was a big factor. But my time in Indiana was great, man. I got to reunite with Mark Jackson, my college teammate. As you mentioned, Reggie Miller, just, you know, the 3 years I played with him, he was just phenomenal, just played off the charts. Dale, Antonio Davis, Rick Smits, he just had a really, really great group of guys and a lot of success. And, you know, that 98 series, like I said, went to 7 games, and we pushed them as hard as we could and just came up a little bit short in Game 7 on the road.
You think that in that Game 7, could you kind of feel the urgency from that Bulls team, just them knowing that was probably their last chance together, that was the last dance, so to speak?
I mean, I think when you get to Game 7 in the conference finals, that's there anyway, no matter what the backdrop was. I was not privy to any of that, to tell you the truth. I don't really remember being a big deal about, you know, you kind of focus on your own team. Whatever they're doing, doesn't really matter. But I think Game 7, conference finals, that's going to give you that type of feeling anyway, no matter what the backdrop is with your own organization.
Chris, I really appreciate you joining us. I guess the last question would just be, when you reflect on all the years you got to spend, you know, being in the same company as someone like MJ, what's maybe the one or two favorite memories that come to mind?
Like most people, right? I'm in awe of his incredible athletic gifts and his drive and his incredible accomplishments. But I got to say, like, through the years, dating back to 1981, you know, when I would bump into him in the off season or, you know, whatever, kind of away from the game, really didn't change a whole lot. It was always really, you know, kind, warm guy, and always liked to reminisce and always liked to laugh and have a good time. Yeah, so, I mean, it was cool watching him, you know, like I said, ascend to greatness, but also nice to, you know, maintain somewhat of a normal relationship over the years. So I'm happy for him and just fortunate enough to, you know, spend some time with him throughout his career. And like I said, we had tremendous success together. So it was looking back on that, it's always fun.
Chris, thank you so much for joining me. I hope the quarantine is treating you well. I hope you and your family stay safe and you know, try to get the most out of this.
Same to you, Kai. Keep up the good work, and look forward to seeing you soon, okay?
Thank you.
Our thanks to Chris Mullen for joining me on the podcast. It was great getting to hear his MJ stories. Warriors Off Court is a production of the San Francisco Chronicle. Support Warriors Off Court and the newsroom that creates it by signing up for a Chronicle membership at sfchronicle.com/pod.